you stop there and just see if there's any questions about anything that I've spoken about tonight or on your own path. Well, it's an interesting involution that we go through. Because in the beginning, as we learn to turn the mind inside and we get quiet inside, in many ways we seem to get more sensitive to this world. There are many times when it feels like all of our nerves are on the outside of the body instead of the inside of the body. And if somebody uses rough speech or has a psychic emanation that is difficult to be around, we are actually more sensitized to that, and it's more painful to us. And this is a necessary stage to go through, because we're opening ourselves to the psychic body. So we need to be sure to protect ourselves during these times as much as we can. We can't obviously control all of our environment all the time, but it becomes easy to see why the yogis retired into caves and get surrounded by thick granite rock all around from worldly vibrations. Because even at a great distance, these vibrations can be difficult. Then something begins to change inside. The light, this Christ consciousness, begins growing inside of us. And the light within us starts to get stronger than the outside vibrations. And when you have that Christ consciousness burning inside of you like a steady flame, a flame that is not influenced by the prevailing breezes or even the winds, the strong windstorms that we can be in. But if you could imagine that flame always burning bright, always burning steady, and that you may have difficult things happen to you in this lifetime, getting God realization does not guarantee that nothing in a human sense that we would consider difficult or travesty of any kind doesn't happen to that one. But rather, because now the flame is burning steady within, that those outer situations can have a certain effect. If there's loud noise, for instance, it may startle your body. But then your body quickly recovers, and it's all right again. And in a similar way, other things may happen through this world. People may do things that are deliberately intended to hurt or to become a problem for the one who is realized. And it may have an initial effect, but then the effect begins to dissipate. You don't hang on to it any longer. And so having this end in mind, this is what we try to emulate all the way through so that we can bring that state of consciousness into ourselves more quickly. We can awaken ourselves to it. So there is a combination that happens. One is that we try to protect ourselves from injurious kind of conditions, and that can be physical, it can be mental, it can be psychic, and so we try to do our best that way. But if something comes along our way, then we draw more deeply upon the strength inside of us to meet that situation. We can have two kind of basic responses to a challenging situation on the outside. We can shrink inside of ourselves. We can try to contract ourselves. And many people have this kind of response. The other is to get very angry and to project out some anger. And it really means, back off, Buster. You're getting too close here. But there is a third way. And that third way comes in with sattvic strength. And in that, it's a cool, calm will that is guided by wisdom and a higher intelligence. And we make the statement. We say what we have to say. We do what we have to do. And we project that sattvic spirit. Now, it may come across in a very powerful way, because sometimes that's what people need on the outside. Sometimes they need a little wake-up call that they've transgressed. They've gone too far. But you don't respond with the same kind of energy. This energy is guided by a divine intelligence. And when you do that, you never say anything that's untrue. You never say anything that later on you wished you hadn't, because you went too far. Because it's being guided, your words are being guided by this higher intelligence, not by the lower impulses of anger. So it's not that we're defenseless. There's the wonderful story of the saint who was coming along through a village. And the villagers came out and asked the saint if he could do something around this snake. The snake was coming out and harassing all the neighborhood to the point where everybody was staying inside their huts. So the saint went and he found the snake and he gave him a lecture. And he said, "Mr. Snake, you are wrong. You're creating bad karma yourself by being a bully. So you must not create harm for others." Well, the snake actually took this to heart. And when the saint left, the snake retired into itself. Well, once the villagers found out that the poor snake wasn't vicious anymore, they really went to town on him, and they would pick him up by the tail and they'd swirl him around, throw him, they'd throw rocks at him, they'd stomp on him, and the poor snake really went through it. And one day the same saint was coming back through the village. And he asked after the snake. And they said, "Well, we don't know, we think he's over there in the field." He went out to the field. There was this poor snake. He was all cut and bruised and it was really in bad shape, next to death. So he asked the snake about it, and the snake told him the story. And the saint said, "Why, Mr. Snake, I said not to bite, but I didn't say you couldn't hiss." So sometimes we need to hiss. Sometimes we need to rattle a little bit. And we need to stand up for what is true and what is right. So oftentimes we can start out with a tap hammer, and if that doesn't work, we can work up to a framing hammer. And if that doesn't work, we can get the big sledgehammer out, because that's what's required. But we shouldn't start out with a sledgehammer. We should work up to it and try to apply the tool that is appropriate to the situation. So you learn to exercise your will. You learn to protect yourself. You learn to stand up for yourself when you need to, and when it, particularly when it comes to truth and to the protection of the innocent. And then you let your light shine, and you let it grow so greatly that the light inside of you is more powerful than any earthly vibrations are. And now you are in full and complete control and self-mastery. You see? And you can operate exactly as God chooses to operate through you. And so you go beyond what we think of as good and bad. You are operating by a higher intelligence now, a higher consciousness. And when you have this, you can operate up and down the spine at any place as divine intelligence operates through you. And you are the witness of what's being done. So this, does that help clarify? Now in the beginning, we're a small tree, and we need to put a fence around the tree so we keep ourselves from those things as much as we can that are very negative, because they will very definitely drag us down. It's very important who we associate with. And in our idea that everything and everybody is God, which is a good thing to cultivate, unless we're established in it, we shouldn't deliberately put ourselves into negative situations. But life has a way of bringing around those people and situations that strengthen us. And one of the things that God showed me is that when we get into difficult situations, it forces us, we were talking about the life energy coming from behind, if we use the opportunity correctly, we draw more deeply upon that divine power and intelligence that's from within us and from behind us. And when we learn to respond to situations by drawing more deeply upon God within us, you see, then we grow spiritually. If we just play on the surface and we get afraid and back away, or if we respond in anger and we try to bully and try to get our way that way, we don't progress spiritually in the same way. So there's a middle path in there, that sattvic path. And taking that and utilizing it to its fullest effect, then we'll grow spiritually from everything that God puts us into. Sometimes it feels like more than what we can handle. But we never have more than we can handle. What's that again?
The Lord sits the back for the burden.
Meaning what?
Mm-hmm. But God never gives us more.
Ah. The lower.
The Lord.
Oh, the Lord.
The Lord fits the back for the burden.
Ah. Yeah. The Lord fits the back for the burden. I thought you were saying lower, and I wasn't getting it, so. Yeah. And He'll even lift a little bit of the load off of us just to make sure we can make it up the hill. If we cut off our own supply, it's amazing how quickly we can close that door. Somebody says something to us that upsets us. Somebody's angry with us. Somebody else is giving us a silent treatment. And you can just feel yourself being contracting. Or you start to just boil over with anger and rage. And how difficult it is in the midst of battle to stay in that middle path, have that sattvic strength. Mother was a wonderful example for me in that way because she dealt with so many different people, and I would see people come at her in a challenging kind of a way. And it wasn't always obvious. It can come in subtle different ways, the way people would challenge her. But I would just see her take a breath, and I can just see in my mind's eye now how she would just settle right down into that chakra that that person was coming at her from. And she would just meet that person right there. And she could operate easily on any one of the different levels, from the very highest to the very lowest. But she didn't meet negative with negative. She met it with pure wisdom, pure light, pure God.
okay, God's always there and they cannot take it without God.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then I can just feel, so I it's almost like it does, it's not even real. God's not even real.
That's the great mystery, is this veil of ignorance. In an individual sense, it's called avidya. Avidya, that's individual ignorance. And on a kind of level of all creation, it's called maya. But how we have always been, from the very beginning, Jesus says, you have been with me from the very beginning, saying that we all have evolved out of that Christ consciousness, but that we can forget it so completely, and that it seems like a dream. We can have a very powerful experience in being uplifted, and then we come back down and it influences for a period of time, and then a veil draws over us as if that never happened. We can go into a complete state of forgetfulness. And people can get lifted up into very high states of consciousness and for longer periods of time, and then they'll face some test in their lives, and their consciousness will draw that veil down again. Now, it seems outside of our control, but what I've noticed through my own experience is that, for instance, being in a very, very uplifted state, and then it just seems like my consciousness started to come down and down and down. It was maddening. I didn't want it to, but it did. And what I saw was that some thought, some feeling would venture through my consciousness. And where before other thoughts, other feelings may have been there, it didn't affect that higher state of consciousness. But with that particular thought or feeling, I would attach myself to it. And it could even be, I hope this experience never leaves me. I don't want it to ever leave me. And I would actually attach, well, you think about what that thought is. I won't have it. I'll go down. And it's just like adding a lead weight to the balloon, and down and down and down and down it goes until you're back into what we think of as an ordinary human consciousness, which after being uplifted like that, you definitely don't want. But seemingly out of control, but it's not out of control. We actually did it to ourselves. We drew the veil over our own mind.
It's hard not to be attached to something that is so wonderful, and then if it's taken away, it's like, I don't want it, whatever, you know?
It's not indifference like that, but it's realizing that, number one, and this is another kind of subtlety that can come along, we have a particular upliftment in God, and we like it. It's maybe a pure state of peace. Oh, my goodness. It's like nectar. I never want this to leave. Now I don't want any other God experience. I only want that. Well, the moment I attach myself to that, it's like shutting the door. And down and down and down I start coming. So I can't be attached to any particular kind of God experience. They're all equally wonderful. And they come, it's like a symphony. And how a symphony will go down into deep, quiet tones, and then it'll gradually build and build and build into a huge orchestra of sound, and then back down again. And God experiences like that. It just goes through so many variations, infinite, infinite variety of bliss. And it's ever new. It's ever new. The moment we attach ourselves to any particular one of them over the other, we cut ourselves off from it. So it's, number one, very subtle. And number two, not so easy to let go of our attachment of it. It's a very natural thing. Or we can begin to think that maybe I'll get bored of this. We don't, but we think maybe I will. You see, we start anticipating into the future. Or what if so-and-so came to know about this? Would they think that I'm strange or different, or would they judge me, or would they laugh at me, you know, that kind of thing. Down and down and down we go. It's an attachment. It's an attachment.
What's
anything like that at all? And when we really analyze it, it can look kind of unimportant in that way, until we go to challenge it. And then we see, oh, that's just a mask for something that is much more tenacious, much more powerful, and unyielding. If I try to challenge that little, oh, I wonder what's on TV, you know, instead of just staying in that experience, and then we try to challenge that, and we find out how powerful that impulse is. That's not an ordinary thing. That's the devil hiding behind that mask for that, and we find out it's quite powerful, quite insidious. So when we treat everything as that obstacle to staying in that divine consciousness and say, all right, okay, that's the game. That's my sadhana. That's my practice, is letting go of those things. When I identify that the fear is there and the fear is taking me away from that, just let it go. Don't attach myself to it. There's that desire nature. There's that fear. Constantly letting it go, just seeing it like clouds floating overhead. They're just thoughts. They're just feelings. And just staying with that presence. As Mother said, keep your mind on God. Just keep your mind on that presence, on that feeling inside, that place of connection. And I think that no matter what state we've gotten ourselves in, if we look for the divine presence inside of us, we can always find it. It may not be as strong or just in the way that we want it to be, but we'll feel something in there. A sense of peace, a sense of joy, a sense of presence that's beyond our own individuality, beyond our own humanness. And once we identify that, then stick with that. Cultivate it. Keep your mind on it. Breathe with it. Let it grow into a larger flame of its own will. So what you're describing is the path. I mean, that is it. It's not like you're off the path. That's it. And what we can expect is that these obstacles, these opposing forces, will come up, and how powerful they are. Right.
Yeah.
And yet you reflect on your own experiences from before that, and it's been so powerfully, you know, confirmed for you that God does exist. But you can see how people can just, they're on their path, and they just drift away. They just drift away because that idea takes hold. And that's the doubting Thomas inside of us. And there are other parts who are enlightened, and there's the doubting Thomas. That's what can seem confusing, that we have both. The Christ exists in you, and the doubting Thomas exists in you, simultaneously. And it's that, again, is a human experience. That's that duality, and in fact, that's the ascension of the cross, is going up each one of the spinal chakras with its dual nature, its positive and negative. And so you're going to, that every one of the disciples represents an aspect of that. So you're going to hit each one of those. And one side will be the positive and the other will be the negative. It's something to be anticipated. And as Papa said, the one thing that he was afraid of was to forget God, to the point where he wouldn't let himself sleep. So I figure if we're going to have a fear, that's the one we should cultivate. But I think it should be comforting to know that that is the path. And that you can't really forget God. Not really. Unless we willfully shut that door. I just really don't want to go there. There's the story of the man who searched through the whole universe, all three universes, to find God. Finally, he came to a door, and the door said, God. He thought, I'm at the right place. I've searched for so long, and I finally found it. And he starts going up the stairway, you know, seven steps on the stairs going up there. And he gets about halfway up there and he just thinks to himself as the board creaks under his foot, well, what if I open the door? You know, what's going to happen? You know, maybe I won't get exactly what I want. You know, my life will be out of my control now. So he just tiptoed back down the steps and he could wander anywhere in the three universes except that one place he knew not to go. And believe it or not, there are people who are like that. They come into very high states of realization. And they come to that place and they cannot go the whole way. Mother spoke about Swami Ashokananda, who she thought the world of. Great miracles happened throughout him. He was a spiritual teacher to so many people in North India. And one day he says, can you give me what I want? And she is thinking, oh, well, God is asking me if I can surrender, you know, on a deeper level. And so that's the way that she took it. And then that night when she was on her own, God said, no, that's not what he meant. He wants realization from you. And she couldn't believe it because in her mind he was up here. And so the next day she went and asked him and he said, yes. He said, I went up to the ocean, but I couldn't dive in. Now, this is a man when he was 9 years old, because he was harassed by his brothers and others. He left home and he lived on his own out in the jungle for years, almost lost the power of speech. He has gone so long. And that he meditated on God night and day. And when the weather changed and he got cold, he told God, he says, you have to take care of this. If I'm focused on the body, whether it's hot or cold, he said, I can't concentrate on you. From that time on, he was not affected by the heat or the cold. Whatever it was, he is completely okay. And he had lived his whole life like that. And now he is asking Mother for his final realization. And one of the things that happened for him is he fell in love with Mother. So he still had that desire for a man-woman relationship. So this is a great, great saint. Not taking anything away from him. But just showing at what level the discrimination needs to be in order to go the entire way.
Or only on our, at our thinking.
Well, when you have your oneness with God, you have your oneness with God, the infinite consciousness. And then it's a matter of divine will as to whether you maintain a human body at all, or whether you maintain an astral or a causal, or whether you just drop all three and just remain in the complete and absolute freedom of spirit. The difference now is that none of those three bodies, the causal, the astral, or the physical, interfere with your oneness with God. Where before, because of the body and body idea of body, that created this field of separation between you and God. So, because people have physical, material minds, they associate, well, the body is the problem. Therefore, the fantasy of, when the body goes, then I'll be in heaven. You know, when I die, then I'll be in heaven. Because the body's the problem, right? Well, that's not exactly right. It's just the wrapper. The desire nature continues. The ignorance continues. And so it's not an automatic kind of entry into heaven. Now we go into the higher, we can go into the astral realms, and to a very material mind, that would seem like heaven. Because there's not the physical demands, there's not the threat, there's easier motion and movement, all of that. It would seem like a heaven. But that's just the first step of many in order to ascend to the highest.
So
in that sense, the work is done, except if through divine will, God gives work to do on lots of different levels. So, for instance, after Master, there's, I think it's in the latest journal. Do we have the journal? We have the story of Rajasi talking about Master, and it was, I think it was about a year after Master's leaving. And, see if I can find it here. And he describes, he has a powerful experience with Master. Okay, Ram, are you hiding it from me?
Yeah, I'm supposed to retrace.
Master's Birthday by Rajasi Janakananda. Special meta, let's see here. Rajasi Janakananda, Master's chief disciple, spent the day in seclusion. Later, he recounted to other disciples a wonderful experience he had had on that hallowed day. I woke around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning of January 5th and saw Larhi Mahasya in the greatest blaze of light in which he has ever manifested to me. Then, one by one, Sri Yukteswar, Babaji, and Master appeared. Master lifted me out of the body, and we floated together over many gatherings of people. Master blessed each group as we floated over it. We were not walking, but floating overhead. It seemed as though Master wanted all the people to know I was with him. I was with Master a long time, from 2 or 3 o'clock until 9 o'clock, the longest I have ever been with him in this way. Quote, Master is very busy there, just as busy as when he was here, helping people in the outer spheres, teaching them the way of salvation and how to achieve self-realization themselves. See, even more busy in the astral realms than here.
I think the word I was looking for instead of work is struggle.
Well, you see, all of that, if by struggle you mean separation from God, then struggle is over. That's what Buddha meant by suffering. But we associate struggle and activity with separation. So if we think of struggle as working hard, but it's good work. And struggle is working to effect some change, but it's like moving a very heavy granite kind of block. And finally we get some motion, we get some movement out of it, and it's in the right direction. But we never lost our sense of oneness with God and all of that exertion of effort. You see, that's the key piece in there. Because once we eliminate that sense of separation, we can have effort, we can have work, we can go through all kinds of experiences in life. They don't affect us in the same way. For instance, if somebody dies and we feel devastated by it, what do we feel? We feel isolated, we feel alone, we feel cut off and separated from that person. And that's what's so devastating to the individual in grief. But if we think of an individual leaving the body, but in spirit we're still connected with them, and there is no separation, then separation of the body is there, but not separation in spirit. So struggle may be there in an outer sense. Jesus definitely, very definitely struggled. He worked. And it was difficult, and sometimes he would get frustrated with the disciples. What? You've been with me all this long and you're still not getting it? What do I need to do? Wake up! Stop this! And he'd do it to shock them, to get them snap out of it. So that's overcoming the ignorance. And once that's overcome, then everything else flows from divine will. And then you don't you don't have the same kind of suffering anymore. Now, if by the Buddha meant physical suffering, well, he still went through physical suffering. So from that standpoint, you could say, well, what was solved? And yet everything was changed for him from that point of realization. So our fear of work, our fear of suffering is really all rooted in ignorance. Once ignorance is removed and we have our oneness with God, life can take whatever form it will. Now, Swamiji, for instance, he went through a lot of suffering in the physical body. And he would say it. He would talk about the pain he was in, the difficulty, not being able to move, having to be tended by other people for personal functions that we just as soon do for ourselves. You know, and all of that was there. But also, there was a state of surrender that was there. And that this was God's play, and it was Papa's will. So from that standpoint, he didn't suffer. But some people like to imagine that there is no suffering there. Well, he did suffer in that sense, in a physical sense. If you can think about it as a parent, you can suffer for your children, but you know that it's the right thing to do. So you willingly suffer for them. And you wouldn't have it any other way. So, same thing for these great realized masters. That's another subtle attachment that gets in there, is our fear of suffering. We have to let that go too, because that closes us off to the grace that will sustain us, that comforter that will come into us.